financial strategies you won't hear anywhere else for your house, your mortgage, and your future. Always accurate and occasionally entertaining, here's your host, Martin Andelman from MandelmanMatters.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Martin Andelman, and this is a Mandelman Matters podcast. Now, this week on the show, we have a very interesting guest who's going to talk about something that is affecting all of our lives far too much. Her name is Dr. Galina Lifschitz, and she is the CEO of a medical group that provides house calls. Remember house calls? Like, I actually wasn't really around for the 1950s, but in the 60s, I can still remember having a doctor come over to the house and bring me a lollipop, take my temperature, and somehow make me all better. Dr. Galina Lifschitz is started a company like that out of San Diego, California. And as a result of treating patients in the home, many of them are older patients. And so when you talk about a frontline worker in the COVID-19 pandemic, I think she's seen it all. Dr. Lifschitz, thank you for coming on. This is a topic that it's become so confusing that I vacillate seemingly every day between this is never going to end, or maybe it's going to end by spring, or it's never going to end, and then maybe it'll end by summer, and maybe it's never going to end, and oh my God. And then I heard Dr. Fauci tell me two masks, and then it's going to be, is it going to be three masks? How has it been going?
Healthcare become a topic that is discussed over dinner now, all over the world, probably. And in terms of predicting when it's going to end, honestly, probably nobody can give a very straight and correct prediction. But if you look at how the vaccination is being rolled out, there is a good hope that it will end in a year from now. And we will be back to normal probably by, I would say, June or July of 2022.
Of 2022. That's what
I believe. So I will give it a year and a half to basically create immunity in the community that is enough to fully open up. Now, I hope it might probably come earlier than that, but there are many obstacles on that way. And one of the obstacles is that people are fearful, and they're fearful of the vaccine that is very new technology, and we still don't know the long-lasting effects of it. We know it's pretty safe on the short run, and we don't see immediate complications so much. But since it's very new, many people would not believe in the science that is behind it, I would say, or sure, don't know about the science behind it. And because of people being hesitant and fearful, I don't think we will get vaccinations fast enough.
So
that's what I see in the field.
So I'm going to ask more about that, but let's go back for a minute to the beginning. You really are the front line. Your doctors are treating older patients at home, and COVID hit last February. When did you see the first case? How did it happen? How did you come to the realization, oh my God, we're having a pandemic and this is really affecting the population that we treat?
We jumped into this not as early as you mentioned. So we already knew the COVID is there. We came prepared. So with the platform that we have, we are deploying something that is to test patients upfront. So before you're entering the house, we will meet patient at the door and do the rapid test. So we already know if we are dealing with COVID patient or not COVID patient. And our first patients who we saw in April here in San Diego, these were patients who, interesting enough, were not having very severe symptoms. They mostly had lost their taste and smell, and that was the reason they called us. So we came and tested them for COVID. And honestly, if you lose your taste and smell, it's 99% that the reason is COVID. That's what we've seen with testing. But just to add to what I said here, with elderly people, of course, there are more things that you need to test upfront immediately, not just COVID positive or COVID negative. We know that COVID affects many other determinants of health. And what we've been doing, we were able to bring rapid laboratory, hospital grade lab, to the patient home and give the result in 15 minutes. Basically, our idea was, okay, if you're COVID positive, then what are your risks? Let's assess your risks. Let's look at your blood work. Let's look at your urine analysis. Let's look at your chronic conditions and stratify you. What should you expect to be doing? And in many cases, that was very helpful. We were able to predict most of the possible complications and hospitalizations. But still, up to 85% of patients with SIN, we're capable of staying at home and getting better within 2 weeks on average.
Wow. So you could actually bring a mobile lab, hospital quality lab, to the patient's home, test them for COVID, and give them an accurate result of whether they have COVID or not in a matter of minutes without them having to leave the house. They didn't have to go into the hospital. They didn't have to go anywhere.
That's the idea. And the technology is there. The technology is mature enough to do this. So you might heard of all sorts of companies like Theranos, who are stating like, oh, we can do all your blood parameters from small tip of your blood. You can do it at home. But to me, it was trying to create something that already exists, basically. So we use the devices that are FDA approved, that have been on the market, some for a few months, some for a couple of years now. But these are pretty novel technologies that we put together in one platform. And yes, as you said, it allows us to do interesting things. Like, for instance, even blood collection. So we use something like that, which is to put on your skin, click the button, and collect enough blood to run up to 200 different parameters out of it. No phlebotomy needed.
Wow.
So basically, patients can even self-collect their blood in the morning and just send it to us or give it to the visiting nurse.
You see, that's something to look forward to. When I was watching TV and seeing lines of people waiting to be tested and waiting and waiting, and you're thinking, how does somebody do that if they're 80 years old? You can't wait in line all day here to get tested. So you could actually send a doctor or someone to the house and they could test them right there. That's remarkable.
Yeah, that's usually a nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's just incredible. And by the way, the reason that this kind of company now exists is because technology has changed what doctors can do in the home. It used to be that if you needed an x-ray, you'd have to go to the hospital because that's where the big giant x-ray machine is housed. But now the x-ray machine, it's like the size of a child's set of golf clubs or something. The pulse oximeter now I saw is like a walnut. It's like a walnut. So because of this miniaturization of medical technology and medical diagnostics, we can now provide this kind of care to people in the home. And for older people, it's a godsend. It's amazing. I mean, it's like, there's no other way.
Yeah, I think that technology was dictating the way the care was provided during the last 3 or 5, maybe, decades, when you haven't seen much of the house call, right? But as you mentioned, that's right. The miniaturization and interconnectivity, everything now is connected. You can share this information seamlessly. It brings the new paradigm. Basically, you can bring the house call on a totally new level now. And just to mention the diagnostics, you just said, okay, x-ray machines. But like our providers, they use this ultrasound machine. So they put it around their neck, pretty much like the stethoscope. And it's connected to any smartphone. You can do the ultrasound at home, and it's basically like a third eye for a provider. So you look immediately into the patient's body, even before you send this patient to x-ray or some other additional imaging, gives you a lot of information on site. And what we've seen, people are not tolerant to wait times these days.
Right.
That's partially driven the wave of telehealth services. And I looked at the survey one day, that shows that people will tend or opt for the televisit if they have to wait at least one day to be seen by a physician in the office. It changes the behavior, and also interesting enough that it's not only millennials. So initially, our assumption was that mostly younger people will be comfortable with these technologies. And we see that older people are all about giving the technology a new level of care that they would like to participate in. They are ready to learn it.
Yeah.
They're very, very receptive of it.
And you are able to treat 85% of COVID patients in the home, keeping them out of the hospital.
Yeah, that was our experience with a patient mixed with gut, which is pretty much consistent across the other healthcare providers. Detecting early and predicting is very important. So in case we knew this patient has very high risk, and we immediately saw that some vital signs don't show us some risk factors and stuff like blood work is not normal, we would send this patient early enough to the hospital. So it will take them maybe 3 to 5 days to be treated there intensively and go back home. So we were lucky not to see much of the very severe cases and death, just a couple of situations. But wow. Maybe that we were just lucky to have that patient mix.
So what's changed? In the beginning, it seemed like the death rate and the hospitalization rate were higher. I've heard that there are better treatment modalities. We're doing things differently now. What's changed about how you're treating COVID today that was not the same as last year? Has anything changed, gotten better?
Yeah, we learned a lot about what this infection is, basically. If you remember, initially there was always this fear that we have shortage of ventilators. Then we learned that putting a patient on a ventilator is not the best option. And if we start on the blood thinners, for instance, early enough, it can save the person from going into the ventilator. And we're looking at this at the disease not so much as their inflammation in the lungs, but more like an inflammation in the vessels. And it adds different drugs into an administration of different procedures into the treatment. So, as well as the early detection. So people who waited maybe a week or two before they actually called the doctor initially because they thought, oh, it's maybe just flu or some sort of cold. Not just getting better, so we'll wait like a week or two and then call a doctor, and it might be too late.
Yeah, that's
so
a bad idea.
So now we think about calling doctors immediately.
Right away. As soon as there's a symptom, anything, they call in.
Yeah.
So that's got to be better. Now, the way that this happened, I think, took the American people and people all over the world by surprise. Okay? So we had people in the beginning. I'm sure Dr. Fauci every night goes to bed and goes, oh, why did I even bother? Why did I say that? In the beginning, we all heard Dr. Fauci say, you don't need to wear a mask. Just wash your hands 50 times a day. And then a couple of months later, it was like, all right, maybe washing your hands not so important, but you need to wear a mask. We're obviously learning what's going on and what should we be doing and what should we be doing. And the whole thing took everybody by surprise. Did you have that kind of experience where people were like resistant to the whole idea that COVID was the problem? They thought it's a cold. And then you tell them, no, it's COVID and people have a hard time accepting this.
You have two different categories of people. And you don't see much people who are in the middle. Like you have either those who are very fearful, they will wear 10 masks over there.
Right.
And then 10 pairs of gloves. And those who would say, that's nothing, that's just cold. I don't care. I can go anywhere. And probably the truth is somewhere in the middle. So to me, initially, when Dr. Fauci and even WHO said, okay, there is no need to wear masks. There is no evidence behind it. I was like, all right, but if you look what physicians are doing in the hospitals, even without COVID, just during the flu season, any respiratory infection season, you will see every nurse and every physician with a mask. And that would be standard. Why not to wear them? Clearly, it's working. If it's working for medical practitioners, it should work for the general public as well.
That's right. But okay, just to say, so then they said, if you don't have a mask, you can use a bandana. And I thought, tell that to the nursing staff at the hospital. Just wear a bandana. It sounded crazy to me. So now we're all listening. I hope by now we're all listening. But now, as you pointed out in the beginning, there are some people that are hesitant to take the vaccine.
Yeah.
We've always had a certain amount of anti-vaxxers, right, that don't believe in any vaccines. But I think this is different. I think there are people here that are concerned about the vaccine, frankly, because it was developed very quickly. And they heard how much, usually it takes 9 years, but we did this one in 9 months. And if that's what I hear, it's not unreasonable to go, that maybe was a little fast. Why are you comfortable? You're comfortable with the vaccine. What can you tell us about why you're comfortable? Why you don't think it was rushed?
I'm thinking how to put it accurately. It's not that I'm comfortable with the vaccine. Honestly, I believe that's true, that mRNA vaccines, at least there's two major ones that we have right now. Moderna's vaccine is mRNA vaccine. So this is a very new technology. It's a new platform. There was no other vaccine that was developed on that platform. So we have about probably now 20 million people who got the vaccine, and that's worldwide. That's a big number. So we can already look at the consequences of this vaccination. But we have only about 3.5-4 months of the time from the time they started the vaccination on that scale. So we know that for the 3 or 4 months, it's going well. We don't see many people developing something unusual. They tolerate the vaccine. They do develop immunity. We can measure their antibodies after the vaccination. They do have high levels of protective antibodies. But we don't know the long-term consequences, and nobody will know it in the next couple years. So what can we do? Number one, we have to weigh the risks. If the risks for getting COVID and getting hit by COVID hard, like having the risk of basically death or a severe disease with COVID, is high, and it's high in all people who have chronic conditions, who are elderly, who have some sort of immunity problems through over their life. So for these people, the risk to be hit by COVID is definitely higher, at least for the next couple of years, than to get the vaccine and get some long-term consequence. So to me, my confidentiality comes from weighing my risks. So for me, as a frontline worker, also, I have a very high risk of acquiring COVID. So I believe that it's better to risk my health with this new vaccine than to risk my health with being exposed to this also still unknown disease, not completely known disease, I would say. There are some people who take a different approach. There are some people who wait until the new type of vaccines, like we know that J&J is going to bring a new vaccine to the market, so, which is based on all the technology, more well-known technology. They might want to wait until this vaccine becomes available. I honestly think it's the solution that every person should make about waiting their chances. So if they live in their multi-generation home, then they would probably want to have the vaccine early.
I see.
If the kids go to anywhere, most of the schools are still online, but let's say you bring your kid to the soccer team and you have a multi-generational home, you'd probably would like to get everybody in this home vaccinated. So if you are still staying at home, you have no reason to go outside, you can order your groceries to be brought to you and you're okay with that, then probably you can wait until there are more vaccines and we know more about them. That's my approach.
And that's interesting. So the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that they just applied for the emergency use with the FDA, mm-hmm. and that one is one shot, not two. And you're saying it was developed on more established vaccination development kind of technology.
Yeah.
So it's more traditional. And that's why it took a little longer. Okay. So if I decide, and that one is somewhat, the efficacy rate is somewhat lower. Is it 86 or 60? Is that a big difference in the effectiveness?
When you compare like 86% to 93-94%, you don't feel it's a big difference, but probably when you count in the numbers of lives, and we're talking about millions of people being vaccinated, then yes, there is a difference, definitely. I think that maybe in 6 months from now, we will know much more about how do mRNA vaccines work, the ones that are being deployed now. I believe that they will work very well. But again, we need more data. We're still collecting this data. And the big deal is that we have this international exchange on this data. I think that's very important because we have countries who started it earlier and in a higher scale and quicker. But one of the things I want to bring in this podcast is that this drive-through vaccination sites, in my opinion, that's not the safest way to administer vaccine. So at least people should know that when they decide to go to get vaccinated, they want to assess their health before doing this. At least measure your blood pressure. Make sure it's normal before you get your vaccine. Measure your temperature. Make sure it's normal. If you have ability to measure your antibody levels, and maybe you already had COVID and you have high level of antibodies, despite the fact, by the way, the CDC says everybody should get the vaccine because we don't know for how long the natural immunity lasts, even those who had COVID in the past. But I would still know it before I go. If I have antibodies already, if I have any symptoms right now, maybe I'm not feeling very good. So I would select the time when I feel confident that my organism is ready to receive the vaccine. And when we do it at home, we come to the patient, and before we administer the vaccine, we do the full assessment of the patient health. So we do the rapid blood work, we measure the antibodies, we take the vital signs, and then we feel very confident that administration of the vaccine is safe, and we also monitor the patient after the vaccination.
Wow. So you would prefer not to go to some sort of drive-through vaccination thing. You'd prefer to see a doctor or a nurse practitioner or what have you so that they can make sure that this is a good time for you to take this vaccine.
I think if you're young and healthy, you can go to the drive-through when it's open for you.
Sure.
If
okay.
If you're not, then to be safe, then sorry.
Yeah, that's really good information to know about. I haven't heard anyone talking about that before. So now let's go to the last aspect of this. And it's the part that has been driving me crazy every day, the mental health of all this. Like you were saying, if you're somebody that can just stay at home, there's no kids there, you have your groceries delivered, you never leave the house, maybe you can wait because you're not exposed to anything. Okay, but aren't people starting to lose their minds over this no social involvement kind of thing and staying at home? I don't know how long this is going to hold on. I've talked to a lot of people and seems like some are starting to, what do they call it? Pandemic fatigue. And have you had, what about people like, you've got a patient you're dealing with, but they have adult children who want to see them and they can't see them. And how is that going? Isn't that getting harder?
That's definitely a problem. So one of the things we've been doing for these people who want to see their loved ones is at least to test themselves before they go. So make sure that if you're going to come and see your elderly parents at home or your family members, everybody in this household has to be tested at least with a rapid antigen test for COVID. And we just hope that there will be more tests available for over-the-counter use. We've heard it from Abbott and some other companies who promised this. So as soon as they will be available for like $5, everybody can test themselves just before they go and still wear the mask.
Still wear the mask, right?
If you do this too, if you know that you're not treating the virus because your test is negative, and you also put the mask on, and you refrain from eating together, so you're not taking your mask off. You just come, you talk, you do some activities, preferably outside if you can go outside together. Here in San Diego, we have beautiful weather, so we have this luxury.
Yeah.
But I think that's the safest environment that helps you to cope with the COVID fatigue, as you call it.
Yeah.
And also we've seen a lot of people that are doing it with pets. So we've seen many adoptions of pets.
Right.
And probably that's something that helps to make your mood a little better.
Yeah, anything, any port in a storm. I understand the vaccine it stops you from getting symptoms or developing this serious illness, but it may not stop you from either getting it or transmitting it.
That's correct.
Why we still need to wear a mask.
I wouldn't say it's 100% well known, but most of the cases you would not tread the virus if you're vaccinated. But we've seen that there is some level of uncertainty about it. So there is a chance that you still can have the virus inside your body, even multiplying in your nasal cavity, even if you don't have any symptoms and you've got a vaccine. That's why the rule is, please, it's always better to wear a good mask. not a bandana.
Should people be getting the KN95 mask or just two medical masks, two regular masks? Or
so I think that, it, again, it depending where you're going. So if you're just outside in plenty of fresh air around you, then a regular mask will work enough. And if you know that you're in some enclosed situation in the store where there is a lot of people, or you're going to the medical facility or for some of your medical needs, then I would recommend you having an N95 for these occasions and just wear it when needed, when the risks are the highest.
But is it N95 or what about KN95?
It's about certification of these masks. And we've seen a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of fraud about it.
Yeah.
So there are N95s that are not really N95s.
Of course.
And probably there are KN95s that are as well as N95s.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell. Of course, if you can order and get a mask from a credible source and it's N95, that's the safest.
That's the safest.
You can think about.
Okay.
But there is a shortage of them, as we all know. And clearly, frontline workers are the ones who need them the most. And that was one of the reasons Dr. Fauci and others were saying for the general public, don't try to buy all these masks. There will not be enough for those who really need them.
All right, that's good. Now, your doctors are serving patients in San Diego, California, right?
Right.
Around San Diego. Is it just San Diego or do you go up to Orange County or just San Diego?
We're expanding. So we started expanding into the areas where mostly it's like rural and Indian health services that we work with right now. And these are available for mostly people who don't have access to other healthcare than just being seen at home with all the tools that we have. But we want to make this available to wide public. We are not there yet. So right now we are San Diego, a little bit of Orange County. And Fresno, but mostly rural areas.
Okay, is it covered by Medicare?
Yes, all the services are covered by Medicaid and Medicare.
Okay,
and most of the private plans as well.
So if you're listening to this in Southern California, you can actually contact Teal Heal. It's TEALHEAL, TealHeal.com.
Yeah, like the color teal.
Yeah, and, like the color teal. Mm-hmm. How did you name it Teal?
So there is a concept of the teal companies, which basically says you can build either a very vertical company, which is called the red company, or a very well network type where everybody in their place has full responsibility for what they're doing. And every nurse that uses our equipment or every physician office that does it has their own voice and their own independence. So that's the concept of being a teal company, being a network company that is not giving directions so much, but listens to the customers.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. All right. Now, what if I don't live in San Diego or Fresno or somewhere you serve? How many other medical groups are there around the United States that can do this sort of in-home care, these house calls?
It's growing. So you should probably just check with your providers locally, and you can just Google by your zip code and see who is mobile care providers. I don't think you will find many that has the same technical capabilities like this rapid diagnostics that we have, but they can see you at home. They can at least draw your blood with their regular standard method, send it to the laboratory when they need it. So there are groups that we see participating in special programs. If you're homebound, you probably are eligible for getting a physician house call when you need it. So you should check with your local provider. So the good resource is also American Academy of Home Care Medicine that kind of puts together, it's a professional association that puts together all the visiting nurses, visiting practitioners, so you can learn who is available in your area.
So house calls are coming back. Look,
they are.
It would seem to me that under COVID, the house calls become just invaluable. I don't want to go to the hospital. I don't want to go to the doctor. I mean, I don't want to sit in the waiting room for an hour, and I don't want to be around these people. So now maybe I can have the doctor come to the house. And if it's covered by Medicare, why wouldn't I want to do that? So they can check with, what's the organization again? The American
Academy of Home Care Medicine.
American Academy of Home Care Medicine will put the website on the blog so that you can see it. But maybe you could check there. You could check with your local hospital. You can check, you can Google it in your area. But see, especially if you have elderly parents or you're older yourself, you can find out. Maybe you don't have to leave the house to see a doctor. Maybe you can get a doctor to come to the house. And these days, that seems more important than ever. So we're going to just, so there's reason for optimism. We don't know when it's going to be over, but you think we're past the worst of it?
It comes in waves. So right now we are on the downhill and we expect another wave, unfortunately. But hopefully that's going to be the last big wave that is ahead of us.
Okay, so maybe we're getting there. We might have another wave, though. We are expecting another wave. Is that summertime or something? Or
probably like in 2 months from now. Still not summertime, but springtime. Like end of springtime.
Maybe it'll be better. I think more people are wearing masks now than were 6 months ago. It seems to me. Maybe we're keeping a little more. Now, I've never liked the phrase social distancing. I always think it should be physical distancing. You can still be social. Great. But let's stay physically distant. And I think more people are doing that as well. So maybe the next wave won't be as bad as the last. And
yes, I think if people are cautious enough and they wear masks and they keep the physical distance, as you call it, and they also test themselves with the first symptoms and don't forget about vaccinations. So I think all this put together is a good reason for optimism.
So maybe this summer I could be sitting outside or even going to a bar and eating inside or something. Maybe we're going to get some part of life back.
I think if you are vaccinated and everybody that goes with you to this bar and sits with you around the table is vaccinated, then it's pretty safe to do. Yes.
Okay. That's what I want. I'm happy to hear it. So if I were vaccinated and the other five people that I was going out to dinner with were also vaccinated, then it's probably okay.
That's what
you
I
can
think.
Go to dinner. That would be wonderful. Because
don't forget that vaccination does not give you immunity immediately. So you have to wait 2 weeks after the second dose.
Gotcha. I've heard that. Now, one more question to go backwards for a minute. But let's say my wife and I we went somewhere and we didn't think we were exposed. We wanted to be certain. When we came home, we got tested the next day. And then someone told us, we should have waited 3 or 4 days. Is that right? You should wait three or four days after. Okay.
Yes. So if you exposure, you have to give the virus time to replicate so you can detect it with a swab. And usually it's about 3 days.
3-4 days. Okay. So if you thought you might be exposed, wait 3-4 days, then you get tested. When you get the second dose of the vaccine, you still wait a couple weeks after that.
Yes.
But once you're there,
2 weeks better. Mm-hmm.
Once you're there, you could go out and maybe have dinner indoors with friends if they were all vaccinated too.
That's correct.
That's like, that starts to feel like good news. Look, there was an article yesterday that said, we're not going to have herd immunity on this planet until 2027. And I said it to a friend of mine who's a physician. I was like, oh my God, is this true? 2027. He said, well, first of all, I think the negative headlines always make the news. But you're saying, look, we don't know, but maybe this will return to some kind of normalcy by next year. And with enough people vaccinated this year, at least your life could go back to some sort of
normal. Think that this article was talking about worldwide immunity.
Yeah.
And it's probably they are right on that. We still have some places on the planet where we don't have immunity for simple things like chickenpox and measles. But in terms of U.S. and your closest friends, then you just push them towards it. Help them to get vaccinated in the safe way. Check their health before the vaccination. Monitor them after the vaccination. Check for their antibody level. And if everybody is in union and have antibodies, we can do it. We can sit together and eat a good dinner.
Yeah, or go on an airplane. Yeah, or go on an airplane or whatever. Now, I've heard in Europe there are some things about something on your passport. If you're trying to go from one country to another, you have to show on your passport you've been vaccinated. You think we'll go to anything like that here?
Distributing this. They call it green passports. distributing it to everybody who got a vaccine.
Yeah. Do you think it'll come here? Like it'll say, look, you have to show that you were vaccinated and then you can come, you can get on a plane or you can go to a baseball game, whatever.
I hope it will be part of the policy.
Yeah.
So if you're already taking this risk of getting vaccinated and you've done it, you have to have the benefit. You have to have some kind of a payoff for it. So you get vaccinated, you get your green passport and you show you are protected so you can go places.
Yeah, but no one's going to force anyone to get a vaccine here, right?
Hopefully not. No.
Yeah, I heard somebody say that. When are they going to force me to get vaccinated? I thought, I don't think we're ever going to do that.
No.
We don't force people to get vaccinated. But there should be reason you should want to do it. You want your life back. We want our lives back. This is the path.
Yes, and just think about the chances of getting complications, at least the short-term complications from the vaccine, they are less than chances of, I don't know, they're very small, like really small if you think about it.
So
just look at the numbers.
Dr. Lifshitz, thank you so much for coming on today. I can't thank you enough. And the work you're doing, treating older patients in the home instead of them going to the hospital, I think it's the future. I think it's brilliant. I think everybody should look into it. If you're in San Diego, you can go to TealHeal.com, TealHeal.com, and get information. And if you're in another part of the country, look for physicians who are making house calls or nurse practitioners or nurses who can make house calls. You don't have to necessarily go to urgent care and sit in the waiting room for an hour and a half. There are other answers in many parts of the country. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll check back with you and see how things are going. And hopefully your optimism, I hope the worst is over. I think we're dealing with it better. We know more. Let's hope we're on the downhill here. All right. Thanks very much.
All right.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much for having me again.
That was Dr. Lifshitz of San Diego, California. Now, I want to tell everybody, I was introduced to her by a very good friend of mine. His name's Dr. Gresham Bain, B-A-Y-N-E. Dr. Bain started a company called 1-800-CALL-DOC, C-A-L-L-D-O-C. This has got to be 25 years ago. And he put together a medical group of physicians that would make house calls. And what he originally explained to me was that the miniaturization of things had impacted medical diagnostics. So now you can have a physician do a house call and provide the same type of medical care that you could get in the hospital. Think about it. Back in the 40s, the 50s, physicians made house calls all the time. But that was because all they had was a black bag. They didn't have MRI machines and ultrasounds and all of these things. So when those technologies became available, the reason doctors stopped making house calls was that they couldn't bring an ultrasound machine or an X-ray machine with them or a lab with them. But then in the 80s, we had the same technology that gave us these tiny little cell phones, these little computers we all carry around. That same type of technology impacted medical diagnostics. And by, the late 90s, doctors could provide a level of care in the home that is comparable to what they could provide in the emergency room. And so Dr. Bain was a hero of mine. I just think what he did was amazing there. And Dr. Lifshitz has taken where Gresham left off and taken it further. And by using the technology and using the medical diagnostic technology and having these mobile vans that have laboratories in them, if this is available in your area, and it's covered by Medicare, it's just like a doctor's visit. It'll be covered by your insurance. So really, think about it, especially now during COVID, if you don't have to go to the doctor, and you can have a doctor come to the house and it'll still be covered by Medicare. I just can't think of why you wouldn't want to do that. And remember all the other things you said. You can check, Google it, house calls in my area. You could check with your local hospital or your local doctor. They may know about a medical group or a nursing group that's doing in-home care. And the other thing she said, I just want to reemphasize, she's not crazy about the idea of older people going to a drive-through vaccination site. So if you can get the vaccine in your doctor's office, maybe that's a better way to go. And if you can get a doctor to come to the house and give you the vaccine, that's just got to be the best of all worlds. Anyway, hope you found this interesting. I hope you found it valuable. I sure did. And until next time, this is Martin Andelman from Mandelman Matters. And this has been a Mandelman Matters podcast.
This episode is complete. Stay tuned for more updates on all the political, social, and economic and legal aspects of the financial crisis. Complicated subjects made easy to understand at mandelmanmatters.com.